What you are looking at is perhaps the most complex mill in the world. Just one look is enough to tell that the most advanced levels of chemical, mechanical, and electrical engineering would be needed to make such a machine. There is no doubt that someone seeing such a machine would wonder about the manufacturing company and the people employed by it, and would seek to obtain information about them. You may never actually see it, but this giant machine, with its flawless system, has been around on Earth for hundreds of millions of years. We each have one of these machines inside us. This machine, the digestive system, made up by organs that begin with our mouths and extend to our intestines, has been created with no earlier model to work from. Anyone possessed of reason and conscience will see the perfect features in this machine in the body and the flawless planning in its details. He or she will realize that such a complex structure must have a creator. Let us now have a closer look at this machine in our bodies. Let us witness together the sublime artistry and knowledge of Allah, the creator of all things animate and inanimate. The beginning of the mill. In this compartment, substances that enter the machine are crushed, broken down, and softened. The part of our body that corresponds to this compartment in a mill is the mouth. The teeth in our mouths have been specially created to grind and break down what we eat. The teeth are covered in enamel, the hardest known organic substance, and are also highly resistant to chemical substances. Every tooth is shaped according to its job. The front teeth, for example, are sharp and tear food apart. Canine teeth are pointed and tear and break up food. The molars have been created to grind foodstuffs. If the teeth in our mouths were all the same, if we had 32 canine teeth or 32 incisors, for instance, eating would be just about impossible. Another example of the structure in our teeth is the way they are arranged in our mouths. Every tooth is in just the right place. The incisors are in the front, and the molars are in the back, right where they are needed. If these were to change places, they would again become completely functionless. There is also a flawless compatibility between the upper and lower teeth, which are completely independent of one another. The teeth in both areas have been created in such a way as to fit one another when the jaw is closed. Details such as the resistant structure of teeth and their arrangement, shapes, and duties being in complete harmony shows the evident planning in them. There is only one reason for the conscious behavior exhibited by cells. Like all the cells in the body, it is Almighty Allah, the creator of all things, who gives the cells that make up our teeth the characteristics they possess. I seek refuge in Allah from the accursed Satan. He is Allah, the Creator, the Maker, the Giver of Form. To Him belong the most beautiful names. Everything in the heavens and earth glorifies Him. He is the Almighty, the All-Wise. Some parts of this machine work just like chemical laboratories and break down substances, entering it by affecting their chemical structures. Just like in this machine, the food we eat is ground up by the teeth and also subjected to a chemical attack from the fluid known as saliva. People are unaware of this fluid in their mouths during the course of their day-to-day lives. They generally do not think about what is secreted, nor how much. In short, very little thought is given about any detail concerning the subject. Saliva, which many people imagine to be a simple secretion, actually contains many delicate balances and is a special mixture containing various chemical substances. First and foremost, this liquid allows us to taste the food we eat. Taste molecules and foodstuffs dissolve in saliva and combine with the ends of the taste receptor nerves in the tongue. Only in this way are we able to taste what we are eating. That is why food eaten with a dry mouth seems to have no taste at all. Two separate saliva fluids with different characteristics are secreted in the mouth. One of these breaks down carbohydrates very finely and partly converts them into sugar. Bread, for example, is a carbohydrate. If you place a piece of bread in your mouth and keep it there for a few minutes without swallowing it, you will detect the sugary taste of the carbohydrate as it is broken down. The other saliva fluid has a very dense consistency. Thanks to this sticky fluid, food particles that spread all over the mouth as we eat are brought back together again. What would happen in the absence of saliva? Because of the dryness in our mouths, we would, of course, be unable to swallow what we ate, or to taste it, or to speak properly. We would be unable to eat any solid food and would have to make do with liquids. That would be a rather uncomfortable state of affairs. Saliva is secreted from three separate glands by making it easier to swallow food by moisturizing it on the one hand, and on the other hand by breaking down components of food that are beneficial for the body by means of the chemical substances it contains. The enzyme amylase in saliva is a chemical specially produced for this task and breaks starch down into sugar. The tongue also plays an important role in mechanical grinding. Not only does the tongue have a very sensitive taste measurement property, it also rolls food up in the mouth and thus facilitates its passage into the throat. There are some 10,000 taste buds on the surface and sides of the tongue. These are sensitive to four different tastes: bitter, sweet, salty, and sour. These taste buds allow us to distinguish between the various foods we eat every day without ever confusing them, to the extent that the tongue can even distinguish a taste it has never encountered before. Thus, we never perceive the taste of a cucumber as being bitter like that of a grapefruit, or imagine that a cake is salty. Moreover, taste buds perceive the same taste and the same food in billions of people. The concepts of sweet, salty, or sour are the same for everyone. Some scientists describe this ability of the tongue as an extraordinary chemical technology. What would happen if there were fewer taste buds in the tongue? Then we could never taste the food we eat. We would have no idea of the taste of something sweet, or of meat, or of any other foodstuff. Whatever we ate, it would all taste the same. Eating would no longer be a pleasurable blessing, but would become a task we had to perform in order to stay alive. Yet that is not the case. By the help of special taste buds in the tongue, we are able to distinguish the flavors of everything we eat. That allows us to take pleasure from eating. Substances that are subjected to the first grinding process, food in other words, are now ready to go to the machine's real grinding compartment. However, the pathway divides into two in the place where they will have to make that passage. One of these paths leads to the grinding machine and the other to the machine's ventilation unit. If these substances were to go to the wrong place, the ventilation unit would break down and the machine would come to a halt, never to function again. Yet such a thing never happens because the precautions to prevent it have been taken. Human beings can use their mouths for eating and for breathing. That is because the windpipe, down which air is drawn into the lungs, lies right next to the esophagus, along which food is propelled. However, there is a very important point here. If chewed food is sent down the windpipe instead of the esophagus, death will result. People swallow hundreds of times a day. Even a few drops of water going down the wrong way would lead to death. The esophagus being constantly closed is no solution. The most rational and practical solution is for the esophagus to have a lid that opens and closes. A flap that occupies a small area at the top of the esophagus and consists of a small tissue automatically closes the windpipe when we swallow. This prevents food or water entering the windpipe as we eat. This flap opens up again after swallowing, and air can then continue to flow down the windpipe. There are many details in this flap. For example, it would be very dangerous if the structure of that valve in an adult human being were the same as that in a baby. The valve in babies operates very differently to that in adults. It is higher up in babies, allowing the baby to suck its mother's milk while breathing. That is why babies are able to cry and suckle at the same time, without choking. If the structure of the flap system in babies were similar to that of adults, then babies could choke as they suckled. However, this need has been fully met in all human beings, from the first human who ever existed to those living today. Apart from those with particular diseases, all humans have exactly the right flap structure when they are babies. In the same way, the structure of the flap again meets their needs when they reach adulthood. Machines in our bodies have highly detailed structures intended to serve specific purposes. We now turn to the compartment where the grinding process takes place, the stomach. Food enters the stomach through a gap known as the cardia. Contractor muscles in this space that joins the esophagus to the stomach work like a valve and prevent half-digested food returning to the esophagus. Nutrients subsequently move on to the upper part of the stomach, which is shaped like a dome, and then move on to the widest part of the stomach after having mixed with gastric fluid. This wide section makes a sharp turn, thus forming the horizontal part of the stomach. The stomach narrows again in this section, which is shorter than the vertical upper section, and opens onto the duodenum through a passage known as the pylorum. This muscled passage at the lower extremity of the stomach also acts like a valve, regulating the movement of semi-digested food from the stomach to the duodenum. It is the rhythmical undulation of the powerful stomach muscles, located in three layers, that enables food to move from the stomach to the mouth and to the pylorum. This undulating movement also churns the food over, kneading and pressing it, and thus enabling it to be ground into small pieces and eventually to be converted into a semi-liquid mixture known as chymus. The digestive process in the stomach is different to that in the mouth. Powerful acids go into action in the stomach. As soon as the food descends to the stomach from the esophagus, cells on the stomach surface begin secreting a fluid known as gastric acid. At the same time, chemical milling fluids by the name of pepsin and hydrochloric acid are also released. These acids in our machine are strong enough even to digest a razor blade. They are essential for substances that are hard to digest, such as protein. However, there is a very important detail here. The stomach itself is made up of protein. So how is it that an acid capable of digesting a razor blade does not damage the stomach? This is another example of the matchless creation in the human body. The stomach does not digest itself because of the depths of its corrugated walls. There are cells with different properties in the deep folds of the stomach walls. These operate in great harmony, some secreting acids, the other giving off a sticky fluid. This fluid, known as mucus, coats the surface of the stomach and protects the stomach wall against the acids like a shield and prevents enzymes damaging the stomach. In addition to destructive enzymes, mucus also prevents infectious viruses and other microorganisms from entering the stomach, as well as acting as a lubricant that make it easier for food to move along inside the channel. How do these processes take place? And how does this protective environment in the stomach come about? Could the cells in the stomach have spontaneously decided to produce these protective substances and in some way have discovered their chemical formula? That is, of course, impossible. Then again, let us just consider what the cells would need in order to do such a thing. In order to produce the substance required for digestion, various cells would first have to be aware that food needed to be digested. Those same cells would have to know that a substance such as acid was required for digestion to take place. Later on, the cells would have to discover the most appropriate acid formula and engage in production in the light of that. In order to produce a protective substance, various cells would first have to determine that this acid could damage the stomach itself, and then examine specimens of that acid in a laboratory and develop the formula that would neutralize the effect of the acid. That acid is so powerful that even one single drop can burn a giant hole in a carpet. For that reason, we must not forget that any error in the formula would result in the stomach being dissolved by its own acids. The valve at the entry to the stomach prevents the acid from escaping and from harming the esophagus. Were it not for that valve, or if it did not work properly, acid will leak into the esophagus and tear it apart. Indeed, in diseases such as gastritis and ulcers, the mucus layer does weaken and serious damage can be inflicted on the lining of the stomach. Naturally, the formation of the substances that so balance one another in the stomach is far more complex than the summary provided here. Even the regulation of these substances' chemical formulas is a major phenomenon all by itself. There is, of course, no possibility of a cell establishing chemical formula, bringing them together, and thus producing a chemical substance. It would be completely irrational to maintain that a cell consisting of unconscious atoms possessed such intelligence and abilities. Furthermore, even if we did exceed the bounds of reason and logic by assuming that the acid in the human stomach did emerge in such a way, there can still be no question of waiting for the substance that will balance it to emerge over the course of time. This is because acids, strong enough to melt a razor blade, would quickly destroy the stomach. It would be impossible for acids to remain unchecked in the stomach for even 2 to 3 days, let alone millions of years. Bearing all this in mind, we are confronted by one inescapable fact. The coexistence of the acid and the mucus that protects the stomach against it is just one of the countless examples of the order and perfection in Allah's creation. Allah has created the human body as an integral whole with a flawless structure. This is not the only example of planning in the working system in this machine. So perfect is the system in the human body that precautions have been taken against all kinds of possibilities. Digestive acids inside an empty stomach will soon damage it. For that reason, the stomach contains no acids when it is empty. The danger of damage being inflicted is thereby eliminated. The empty stomach contains an enzyme known as pepsinogen, which has no digestive properties. When food enters the stomach, however, the gastric cells begin secreting hydrochloric acid. This immediately alters the structure of the pepsinogen, converting it into a very powerful destructive enzyme called pepsin. This immediately starts working on the food in the stomach. There is obviously a power that knows when the stomach cells should secrete which substance that enables the cells to go into action in just the right way, and that regulates the timing of the acid secretion. This power in the human body is Allah, who created the entire universe, who created all the living things in it, and who created all human beings. Allah has no partner in the creation, and says the following about those who adopt other gods than Him in the Quran. I seek refuge in Allah from the accursed Satan. Do they make things into partner gods which cannot create anything, and are themselves created, which are not capable of helping them, and cannot even help themselves? There is great activity where the milling process is carried out. Enormous hustle and bustle begins in your stomach shortly after you eat anything. Your stomach constantly churns to the right and left, upwards and downwards, and strives to ensure that food is well digested. However, thanks to the special suspension system in the stomach, you are never aware of this motion. The stomach muscles are arranged in 3 separate directions. This means that the stomach is easily able to move up, down, and diagonally. Food thus makes better contact with the gastric juices. However, movements of this kind always bring a danger with them: friction. The system in our bodies are not limited to digestion. there are other systems and machines alongside the machine under discussion. It is essential that this movement and the friction resulting from it should not damage these systems. The stomach is an organ lying more or less alongside the intestines. Its constant motion will mean friction against the intestines, something that could lead to serious problems for human health. Naturally, a precaution has also been taken against this danger. The outermost layer of the stomach is coated with a membrane known as the peritoneum. A viscous fluid released by this membrane performs a function that can be described as the external lubrication of the stomach and intestines, oiling these organs and thus preventing them from being damaged by rubbing against one another. The process of breaking down the substances that emerge from the main digestive unit is not yet finished. Food that has been turned into the consistency of a water paste in the stomach is forwarded through a one-way valve to the duodenum and from there to the small intestine. Although a large part of the food has been broken down in the stomach, some of the food in the stomach has still not been broken down into its smallest components. These foods that leave the stomach without having been fully digested shortly afterwards reach the small intestine. Fats, for example, are difficult to digest because they are large molecules and are not soluble in water. For that reason, fat digestion takes place in the small intestine rather than in the mouth and in the stomach. Two organs, the pancreas and the liver, enter the picture at this stage. These two organs send two special fluids through a channel and into the small intestine. The liver is aware that the stomach has not broken fats down. It also possesses the chemical formula for a special fluid that will perform that task. The liver knows the moment that fatty foods reach the intestine and releases this special fluid it has prepared and stored at just the right time and in just the right direction. This secretion, known as bile, does not just break down fats. It also helps with the broken down fats being absorbed from the small intestine. In addition, it contains special chemical compounds that enable vitamins to be absorbed from the intestine. What is more, it is an antiseptic that kills harmful bacteria in the intestine. The job of this secretion, called bile, is to subject the fats in foods that reach the small intestine from the stomach for a preparatory process. This increases the effectiveness of the fluid emitted by the pancreas. Pancreatic fluid contains a number of enzymes and assists with the digestion of starch and proteins, as well as that of fats. The mucosa that line the inner surface of the small intestine contain a large number of small secretory glands. The various enzymes in the intestinal fluid released by these glands play an important role in the digestion of those food that have still not been sufficiently broken down. Three to 5 hours after eating, most of the food in the small intestine has been grinded down. In this way, carbohydrates are converted into simple sugars, proteins into amino acids, and fats into glycerol and fatty acids, thus making them ready to be absorbed. Absorbent cells in the small intestine latch onto food molecules that are ready to be absorbed. They then release these into the bloodstream. No nutrients apart from water are left in the food that is now about to leave the small intestine. They've all been absorbed. Thank you. already mentioned the use of acids in the main milling system. This acid will now, together with the substances being digested, move on to the next units. This represents a very grave danger to the digestive system, because these units, the duodenum for example, have no special protective layer such as that in the stomach. So how is it that the duodenum is not harmed by these acids? When the level of acids reaching the duodenum with food from the stomach reaches a dangerous height, a hormone known as secretin starts to be released by the cells in the intestinal wall. There are several points regarding this process that need to be considered. First, the hormone secretin that protects the duodenum exits in the cells, on the surface of the intestine in the form of prosecretin. Under the acidic effect of digested food, this hormone turns into another chemical substance, secretin, and this hormone eliminates the harmful effect of the secretions. Second, the hormone secretin arrives at the pancreas by the way of the bloodstream and instructs the pancreas to release enzymes. Aware that the duodenum is under threat, the pancreas sends bicarbonate molecules to that region. These molecules neutralize the gastric acid and protect the duodenum. The way that cells in the dark depths of the human body, which have no eyes or ears, no brain, and no consciousness, operate within such a flawless order is a result of Allah's sublime creation. It is Allah, the Omniscient, who creates the cells and the properties they possess. Allah shows us the infinite nature of His might in features such as these that He has created in the human body. The digestion of everything we eat is completed in the small intestine. The final stage of digestion, however, is the absorption of digestive products for distribution to where they are required in the body. Very little absorption takes place in the mouth and stomach, which are also components of the digestive system. Absorption takes place entirely in the intestines, and the structure of the small intestine is fully suited to this process. The interior surface of the small intestine is highly corrugated and contains microscopic pumps. These pumps are absorbent cells which trap nutrients needed by the body and pump them to the blood vessels to which they are connected. Thanks to the corrugated surface of the intestines and the micropumps in it, the small intestine has a very large surface area. So large, in fact, that it can reach up to 300 square meters in adults. This is the approximate equivalent of 2 tennis courts. Digestion of nutrients takes place in this large area. Food is first broken down and turned into a kind of paste. This is then spread over the inner surface of the intestine in such a way as to cover it entirely in a very thin coating. The cells are thus easily able to extract all the nutrients from the food. One special function of the small intestine is that it absorbs as much of certain substances as the body needs. For example, too much iron is harmful to the body. Excess iron above a particular level that reaches the intestines is expelled from it without being absorbed. In addition, the small intestine has a very special area consisting of cells that only absorb vitamin B12. Unless people who have had this section of the intestine surgically removed receive the appropriate medical treatment, death is inevitable. Some nutrients are absorbed in the large intestine. One of these is vitamin K. This is an important vitamin that serves in blood clotting, and a deficiency of this vitamin can have very serious consequences that can even lead to death. However, in nature, vitamin K is not found in the form needed by the human body. The body has to turn this vitamin into a form in which it can be used. In other words, it has to refine it. So, how is it that people do not die of vitamin K deficiency? What is the mechanism that refines this vitamin and turns it into a form that we can use? Special bacteria in the intestines subject vitamin K to a series of processes, refine it, and make it capable of being used. Vitamin K, refined by these bacteria, enters the bloodstream by being absorbed to the large intestine. The way that we need such tiny bacteria, the presence of which we are unaware of, and whose name we may never have even heard before, is a matter calling for considerable reflection. No coincidence can give rise to a bacterium, place that bacterium in the human intestine, and then make its genetic material capable of performing processes useful to human beings. It is next to impossible for a person to identify mineral salts and powdered metals when chemical substances are laid out before him. No one who has not received training in the field can tell iron apart from zinc just by looking at them. Neither is it possible to tell which substance will benefit the body and how much of which ones is needed at that particular moment. Human beings cannot distinguish between these substances, though the cells in their intestines can do so without the slightest difficulty. As we have seen, the possession of intelligence and consciousness is not enough to be able to tell chemical substances apart. Detailed information on the subject is also essential. That being the case, how did the intestinal cells come by that information? How do the trillions of cells in the human body determine which chemical is lacking and which there is too much of? And how do they know how to put the matters right? Cells consisting of combinations of atoms cannot be regarded as possessing any will of their own. This information has obviously been specially placed inside them. It is also obviously impossible for such a glorious process to come about by chance or from any other effect. This goes to show that there is a superior power that bestows the consciousness that cells exhibit upon them, and that power is Allah, the creator of all things. It is Allah who shapes them within a specific order. I seek refuge in Allah from the accursed Satan. He is the originator of the heavens and the earth. How could he have a son when he has no wife? He created all things, and he has knowledge of all things. That is Allah, your Lord. There is no God but Him, the Creator of everything. So worship Him. He is responsible for everything.